if everyone switched their toilet paper, we would literally be saving 30,000 trees a day, which we are rapidly losing to deforestation, which we are rapidly trying to replant through other impact efforts. I'm sure many listeners have seen some buy one and plant a tree efforts, which are awesome, but what if we just didn't cut down 30,000 of those trees every day?
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about something really simple, but really important. And that's going to be diving into this topic of, does it really matter the products that we're using on a daily basis? And what kind of an impact does it make on the world, on business, on, you know, really all around us, if we can start to switch some of the items that we're using that we've just grown accustomed to use? And so to have this conversation, I want to welcome to the show Rachel Coyce, who is the founder of The Simple Switch. Rachel, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I am doing great. It's always fun to have another Colorado friend. So we're recording this virtually, but we're about an hour away. So that's always always a joy and a pleasure. And so, like I said, we're going to talk about your business, The Simple Switch. We'll get into the business model and origin story a little bit later. But the first thing I want to dive straight into is this question of, you know, does it make a difference for us to like switch some of our products that we're using on a regular basis? Does it really matter what products we're using on a daily basis?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the most important thing that I've been on a soapbox about with this recently is that we are not the reason that we are in this mess as consumers, right? The companies have built the systems to create some of the well now known on the news issues that come from kind of the sustainability or lack thereof of a lot of the products that we consume. But the power that we have to kind of move us out of those things and to make the negative or the opposing impact to what's being made now. So even just looking at something, our bestseller is toilet paper. So it's, that is like as simple of a switch as you can make, right? Is just buying a different brand of toilet paper. And ours is plastic free. So instead of shrink wrapped in plastic, it's wrapped in paper that's both recyclable and compostable. The supplier we work with does completely carbon neutral shipping, or as they say in Australia, climate balanced, which I think is kind of a fun term. And they also give a portion of their proceeds to conservation efforts. And the toilet paper itself is made from sustainable bamboo instead of the nearly 27,000 trees that get cut down a day for toilet paper. So These are just stats just for literally one out of 4,000 of the products that we sell. Luckily it is our bestseller, has a big impact. So if you think about it, like if everyone switched their toilet paper, we would literally be saving 30,000 trees a day, which we are rapidly losing to deforestation, which we are rapidly trying to replant through other impact efforts. I'm sure many listeners have seen some buy one and plant a tree efforts, which are awesome. But what if we just didn't cut down 30,000 of those trees every day? So it definitely, it makes a difference on a, you know, one-off impact perspective. But if you changed your toilet paper for a year, maybe that's, the boxes can be pretty big if you, you know, choose the big one. So maybe that's three boxes that you buy from this company instead of a typical company that's using virgin trees. That's a huge impact. And that's just you. So that's not even you and your family who you also convince. Anyways, the answer is yes. What you do really does make a difference. Our economy is fueling a lot of the negative impact, and it can also fuel a lot of the positive impact.
Right. So, and even with that example of toilet paper, like it still feels daunting. if I'm being transparent, and you know, I think a lot of our listeners probably feel the same way at times where it's like, okay, that's really awesome, 27,000. But like, you know, I know the whole world doesn't use toilet paper in the way that like America does, but let's say like half the world, like, okay, so like if we change, you know, 4 billion people change to different toilet paper, then that's 27,000. So you like do the math and it's like, okay, so I'm saving like a branch of a tree.
But every day, you know, like a branch of a tree every day, you know, it's not, because totally, I get that. And it is really daunting on a systemic level. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your question. You could finish,
but great.
I think about this all the time because you're absolutely right. It can be scary.
Yeah. And I think this is why I wanted to have you on the show. Cause I think like, we just need to change how we think about things. We need to change how we approach things. And so, the simple switch, your kind of goal of the company, is it to highlight companies, highlight products that are more sustainable? Like how do you describe the simple switch to somebody that you meet?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the mission of Simple Switch is to normalize ethical and sustainable shopping. So for us, it's not about getting kind of the eco influencers on board. It's not about getting like your crazy hippie cousin, who maybe I'm the crazy hippie cousin, so I say that in the most endearing way possible. But really for us, we want it to be so easy to make the right decision that it can actually be normalized and actually make that large systemic impact. Truly, truly, if just you, Seth, change your toilet paper, that is going to make a pretty significant impact just in all of those things, right? Plastic waste, carbon emissions, and trees used, materials used. But if we can make it so easy that people are just buying these things regularly, putting on subscription, which as I mentioned, is one of our big focuses for this year. So allowing it to be automated. None of us have time to really like be worrying about this stuff all the time. So our mission is, we say ease without apathy as one of our company values. And so exactly like you were saying, it can get really scary, can get really overwhelming. We want it to feel easy, winsome, accessible, frictionless, but not have that remove it from the amazing, incredible impact that you can be making while you're shopping. I tend to think that disconnectedness is part of what's at the heart of the way capitalism and our kind of fast-paced economy can make some of the negative impact that it's making, is just because people are so disconnected from who's making it, how it's being made. So we try to make it just as easy, but with a lot more of that connection where people can understand, learn, and be really proud of the shopping that they're doing.
Right. I'm curious to how this all started, not necessarily Simple Switch, we'll get into that, but like bigger picture, I like to think that the majority of people in the world have good intentions when they, you know, make decisions. So like, I don't, when you think about like big, you know, big time CEOs and different things, like different industry leaders, and like, I don't think that they several decades ago set out and said, okay, we're going to build this business at the cost of the environment, at the cost of the planet, you know, we're going to destroy the Amazon. Like, I don't think that that was the motive, but that's kind of where, in a lot of ways and in a lot of industries, that's kind of where we've gotten to. So I'm curious to, if you've, you know, if we zoom out, can you like walk us through like how have we gotten into this place and help us understand like how urgent of a situation like the place that we're in is?
Wow, what a good question. Yes, absolutely. You know, we talk about, unfortunately, we can see some of the, maybe I wouldn't use the word malicious, but maybe just thoughtless decisions that are still being made by, you know, said leaders or business leaders or government leaders unfolding now. And so we can see some of those things being conscious efforts, but I totally agree. I don't think everyone set out to be like, you know, I'm here to kill the Amazon rainforest, right? That's not the stated goal. But I think what does tend to cause that kind of unfortunate impact, sometimes accidental, is the priorities being on profit. And so another one of our stated values is people and planet over profit. And the cool thing is we are a for-profit company. We're a profitable business model. That's how we're able to thrive and how we're able to grow, take investors, you know, be a player in the market. But we make every decision with people and planet in mind, And if that is going to cut into profit, we, you know, that's a sacrifice that we're willing to make. And part of this is people being greedy. Part of it is just the culture of being a business owner. A big part of it is actually just the culture of business and the economy as a whole. Because businesses are actually, you know, bound and expected to provide what's best for their stakeholders. And so when you look at it from that perspective of, you know, they are also following through on a commitment that they've made to do what's best for their investors, their shareholders, those things. We're seeing a really cool push now where companies are putting in their stated values, mission, and legal commitments even to have their wider stakeholder group. So people, planet, the, you know, fair wages of the labor in their supply chain, whatever it is, you know, they have a legal requirement to keep that in mind when they're making business decisions. And so that's how we, in the same way that I'm saying that incremental changes by you switching your toilet paper or those kind of things, those same kind of incremental changes, I think, is what got us in this mess, which is one of the reasons I believe so strongly that it can get us out. It's just like putting policies and commitments and often legal ones in place in order to hold yourselves accountable. So for instance, maybe we look at someone like Jeff Bezos and the just rampant inequality of the people who work for him and what they get paid. Even worse, the people who don't work directly for him but work in the supply chain for many of the most popular Amazon suppliers versus, you know, the billions that he makes off of that, I consider exploitation, right? I think that, you know, if you're seeing that many profits at the top, then that should be shared more evenly. And so I have a commitment, a written commitment in our B Corp certification to never be paid more than 5 times what the lowest paid employee in my company is making. So just having those commitments to have, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. Like that's something I want to be not only something that, you know, I say in our company meetings and make people feel good, but stuff that people know that, you know, as we grow, or we want our community to grow, or even in the way we fundraise. So anyways, I could go like a million miles with that answer, but it's kind of some initial thoughts.
That's great. And I think it's a tricky balance. Yeah. I like that you mentioned, people and planet before profit. And again, that's a big conversation of diving into this world of, obviously I think we've probably both seen really well-intentioned companies that don't survive because they're not thinking about profit. They're not thinking about the sustainability side of it, but then also, you know, the profit should not be at the expense of the people and of the planet and different things. So I think that's a hard balance, but it's a healthy balance, and we need to have those conversations. So what are some of the products or industries that maybe you highlight or find yourself regularly talking about that are either the most harmful and people don't know it, or that by switching products, we can make the biggest difference?
Yeah. So we try to do a lot of education, not only around the products that we currently sell, but just around industries as a whole. So I love that question. Fashion is a huge one. So we try to do a lot of education around, we don't want you to buy more, we want you to buy better. So if you're already looking for a sweatshirt, go ahead and get it from us because ours are fair trade, made with eco-friendly materials, things like that. But what we're not trying to push you to do is buy more, because one of the major issues in an industry like fashion is just overconsumption, right? And kind of trying to do some slow but sure consumer education around buying high quality pieces so that they wear out less. We even have a sock company that is, they're lined with silver, like the actual fabric has silver in it, which is antimicrobial and helps fight odor. So you don't need to wash those socks as often as you would need to wash a normal pair of socks. And that is their, one of their efforts for sustainability, because then you're using less resources even in your washing. Like that's a kind of strange, less straightforward example of that. But fashion is a big one. We're always adding clothing brands, but trying to add them extremely intentionally. So it's not just buy more clothing. It's, you know, those things alongside. I would say that the ones that I talk about the most are everyday use items. So if we're looking at something like laundry detergent, and there is such a quantifiable, measurable impact of buying. What I use is these laundry detergent sheets. So it almost looks like a dryer sheet, but it's a concentrated version of the detergent that this one is plant-based and natural. I think those words can freak people out and make them think it doesn't actually work, but it super does. I've been loving using it. And so that comes in a cardboard box, like barely bigger than an envelope that you would, you know, get in the mail, but has more than 100 loads in it. So it takes less space, not only from a consumer perspective, it's significantly less messy and it takes less space on your shelf. But as far as sustainability goes, you're not shipping the excess water that normally comes in your big goopy jugs around the country, which saves carbon emissions. It's much lighter, which makes a huge deal when you're talking emissions. But it's also not creating any single-use plastic with those jugs. And laundry room, kitchen, and bathroom are three of the biggest players for single-use plastic waste, which I'm sure, you know, if everyone takes a minute and just counts up how many plastic bottles they have between their laundry room, kitchen, and bathroom, it's like, oh yeah, definitely makes sense that, that those are like the key players. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So any of those, I mean, it could be it's toothpaste, it's your hand soap, it's your laundry detergent, like I said, those toilet paper, paper towels type of products, tend to be the one that I focus on the most. Some of the easiest switches and some of the most impactful.
That's awesome. Does this cost more and should it be worth it? And I kind of context wise, I've kind of been under this impression that like one of the, depending on which side of it, one of the downsides, or I guess first one of the upsides of like our capitalist culture growing so much has been people can live on pretty cheap. I know cost of living is going up, but people like we've grown to be accustomed to being able to like get food and get clothes for pretty cheap. The downside of that is that's maybe not like just because it's possible doesn't mean it's sustainable. So I've kind of been like wondering and been exploring, like, have we gotten used to like, you know, grocery bills and clothing bills and like all of our bills being pretty low when actually that's like not what's best and we should actually be paying more for things. Help me understand, like, does this stuff cost more and should we start shifting our expectations towards being okay with it?
Absolutely. Great question. So I think, man, my best answer is it depends, which I think is one that would make people be like, that means yes. But really it depends on the type of thing that you're buying. So for instance, with those laundry sheets that I was mentioning, it is the same or less statistically much less per load, to use those sheets than if you were doing it with a jug of detergent. So there are definitely ones that are just as affordable. Same with toilet paper, at least if you were paying for the same quality. You know, if you're headed into a Walmart bathroom and using, you know, the giant bulk toilet papers, it is definitely going to be cheaper per sheet. But if you're, you know, buying a nice toilet paper, it's going to be pretty equal. And the people, you know, who have bought from us, that's the feedback I've gotten, I think, as well. We haven't super formalized that. It would be nice to get people's perceived feedback on this, because that's one of the interesting things that, like you said, this has been your perception that it's a lot more expensive. And I would say it tends to be about 50-50. Now, where it does tend to be more expensive is anything that is like handmade versus mass produced, or handmade with good working conditions. So the environmental side does not need to be always more expensive. Sometimes, absolutely it is. Sometimes it's about the materials used are maybe not widely available yet. If someone's doing compostable packaging, it's probably going to be a little bit more expensive than single-use plastic packaging because of the widespread availability of that packaging to companies. Less about the actual cost of producing it, but just more of a supply and demand issue. But I think with the social side of things, so like are people getting paid a fair wage to do this? Which is another one where like garment industry and fashion, and I would also say like home decor type products come into play. So for instance, we sell like gorgeous handmade baskets that are giving an empowering living wage to the makers, versus if you like picked up a mass produced basket at a Home Goods or Walmart or something, it's going to be cheaper, but it probably also means that it's either significantly lower quality, which means you're probably going to have to buy it again or buy something similar again when it wears out, which ends up being, you know, more expensive in the long run. I have met several women through conferences and my travels, who one looked me in the eye and said, you know, I hope that when you buy your next t-shirt, you think about the things I had to go through when I was working in that industry for the company that you were likely making that, you know, buying that t-shirt for, things like 20-hour work days, things like sexual abuse and assault on the job by employers, you know, lack of accountability around breaks, things that we really take for granted, or at least I certainly do, to have kind of the freedom and the rights to do that. But any of that, like, stuff that fights coercion and exploitation, that's where it gets tricky, because that's where that disconnectedness can come in. So saying, well, I could get 5 shirts for, you know, the cost of this one shirt. Now, I will say a few of our apparel companies are what I would say just as affordable as kind of stuff I see at a general department store or anything like that. But those are the ones I tend to see a little bit more of a price difference. Now, the most important thing I want to say with all of that said, so it's kind of a, yes, we should be getting used to it when we see higher prices for some of those things where it's ethics related. I think industries are constantly trying to drive down the prices on these sustainable products to make them more accessible for everyone. What I would say the best attitude to keep about it is make a commitment to buying from these kind of companies, ethical and sustainable, if you have the money to be making a brand decision when you go to the store, right? So people who are living in a food desert and, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, barely able to get by, are not our target customer. They are not the people that we are trying to reach and help them make these decisions. There are so much more, you know, as far as even hierarchy of needs, things that those people need to be worrying about, and we want to empower them to do that. But if you're someone who's going to a store and able to make a decision, generally the prices are going to be in your reach, even if they are a little bit more expensive. I think that sacrifice is what we should be getting used to. So people with the disposable income, to have it not break the bank, either choosing, oh, I'm only going to buy one shirt instead of 2 shirts, or I'm going to get this toilet paper even though it costs a little bit more and skip out on, you know, the I hate to use the coffee example because I feel like there's so much weird shaming around grabbing a coffee and the finances, but just, you know, sacrificing eating out that day or something and saying like, that's the kind of thing that we're, I would much rather people get something that is high quality and lasts for a long time and is from one of these ethical and sustainable brands if they have the option. So, but that's so tricky because we're never like trying to shame people into doing it. And we really are not trying to hit people who are already hit so hard economically. But there is this weird gray area of people who kind of identify as not having a lot of money, but still definitely do have that disposable income to be making those decisions. And so just being like really honest with ourselves about where that line is, and what, you know, what lifestyle changes we can be making.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think a lot of it is people have to know where you're at in your hierarchy of needs. And the reality is there are a lot of people that are in survival mode, like they're paycheck to paycheck. They're just trying to make it through the next month. And that season, you know, people live in that season so that they can get to a place where they can make some of these brand decisions. And I think the masses getting to that place or getting to a place, you know, that's going to then bring, like, scale always brings the price down. And so I think the reality is that this, you know, scale for these things are going to make some more ethical products more attainable for everybody. So I'm curious, when the spark started for you. I think there is always this moment in someone's story where, you know, maybe they've been thinking about something, but there's always a moment where like you decide to jump off the cliff. Like you're like, okay, I'm starting this. So when was that moment for you that caused you to actually start Simple Switch?
Yeah. I was sitting in that exact position that you said, where people are kind of considering the ethical and sustainable purchasing journey, or maybe, you know, they've heard me say switch your toilet paper so many times that they like kind of can't ignore it anymore, you know, whatever it is. So I was a consumer. I had just been a business consultant in South Africa. It was an internship for me during college, working with under-resourced entrepreneurs. So super talented, really educated, but not the access to market that they needed to make their businesses successful. And as I was contemplating, you know, what I wanted to bring home and learn and implement from that experience, I decided, okay, well, you know, I have to come home right here to here in Colorado. And I don't think my next move is move to South Africa and like change the economy of South African entrepreneurship, because they're doing fine on their own. And what I did feel like I could do, you know, regardless of any of my next big steps or career or anything else, is just try to use the money I was spending, any money I was spending, to give that access to market to the people that I believed in. And so I've always been really sustainability focused, just growing up here in Colorado and with family members, like my grandmother would pull over on the side of the road to pick up litter type of thing. And also same with kind of social impact. Would really grew up in a family that was really passionate about that kind of impact as well, internationally and domestic. So I was thinking, okay, like this is great. I spend money on normal things, sometimes clothes, sometimes, you know, day-to-day essentials. I set like a really lofty goal. I think it was, I'm going to spend, you know, 80% of my money. I don't have to spend all of it, but I'm going to try to spend 80% of the money. I'm going to budget it out. I'm going to track it with ethical or sustainable companies, right? Ones that I can see are making kind of trackable impact. Cause I had been kind of drawn into the communities of several ethical brands, and sustainable brands that were on their way up. So I was like, this will be easy for me. I have the resources to do this. And I was just totally wrong. It was so hard. It was so time consuming. It took forever to research. It was terribly confusing because of all of the greenwashing and misinformation that we see online. It was very, very frustrating and disheartening, even for someone like me who had made this like lofty commitment and gotten excited about it. And at the same time was when Amazon was really, really focusing on kind of their one click buy and the like buttons that you could press. So like in your laundry room, you know, like, oh, send me more laundry detergent, which haven't really taken off. I always say, I think it's because like smartphones and apps, around the same time were like really getting popularized. And so obviously you don't need a physical button if you like have your physical button in your pocket, but, essentially, I felt like there was this huge, huge gap in shopping, where it was becoming so easy for us to get anything that we wanted, but it was not at all, from what I was seeing as a very avid consumer and committed consumer, was not that easy to find the same things from ethical and sustainable brands. So I've been pretty single-minded about this being what I do since then, and that was like 6 years ago, so...
What was the first step? Like, was it just finding, like, how did things actually get started for you?
Yeah. I had the idea for this in 2015, and then I already had planned to and committed to going abroad for a year in between 2016 and 2017. So I did a lot of kind of brainstorming, asking random friends or classmates. I was still an undergrad when I had the idea, about, you know, their thoughts on the business model, or, you know, if you were a consumer of this, what would you want type of thing? And starting to like look up more and more companies we'd be working with. Then did my year abroad, which that's, as I mentioned, where I met several women who were, you know, survivors of human trafficking and labor exploitation, and really informed a lot of, I think, my and spent a year in 12 countries. then when I came home, really kind of did boots on the ground. And the beginning for me, because I was not coming from a tech Silicon Valley type background, the beginning for me was trying to find a technical co-founder who would build me a website or an app, because I just had no idea what that even could possibly look like. We now host on a, you know, third-party website that I'm able to program myself, which is great because it allowed us to get started fast and we're able to optimize and make changes. But that way I didn't have to wait to find the perfect co-founder before getting started. And yeah, we're 3 years in now and just starting to hire on some people to join me. I'm just about to start taking a regular paycheck, hopefully this month. And we've been very like bootstrap startup up to this point, but hoping to 30x this year, because if we're looking to normalize ethical shopping, we can't be like the best kept secret. We need to be a household name. Yeah. So it's been quite a journey. I mean, that's obviously oversimplified, but it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What's the, help our listeners understand what the business model is and where you see this going?
Yeah, absolutely. So business model is we are a dropshipper primarily. We do sell a few kind of branded products as well as some like samples and things that we do some third-party logistics, but primarily a dropshipper. So we work with about 60 suppliers right now, and that is growing faster than ever. We have companies reaching out to us to work with us. We're sourcing from amazing certifiers like B Corp, Fair Trade, Climate Neutral, things like that. And then we get a percentage as Simple Switch on every sale that goes through our platform. So really similar to, honestly, how Amazon does a lot of their sales, where we're, you know, working with various sellers from around the world, and we are their middleman.
Love it. What, you mentioned 30X this year. What are your hopes maybe for the next 12 to 18 months and where Simple Switch is going?
Yeah, so we are hoping to do go from a year in the thousands to a year in the millions this year, and that's going to look like about 30X to 50X growth. I'm in a really exciting time right now where we're kind of figuring out what the next funding steps are going to look like for that. So as I mentioned, we've been totally bootstrapped up to this point. One of my quirkiest stories is that one of our crowdfunding capital raises that we did, just a small one for less than $20,000, ended in me getting a tattoo of the Simple Switch logo on my butt, because that is the kind of like bootstrappy, scrappy funding that we've done up to this point. So can, you know, no one can say I'm not committed, I guess. But yeah, we are hoping to do a, well, this isn't super official, but maybe by the time people are listening to this, it will be. So I think we're planning on doing a regulation crowdfunding round for probably around 250,000, and putting the majority of that into marketing spend and really, really scaling up our digital presence. Because obviously that's where people are finding us and needing to shop with us. And then also growing the team so that we have more capacity to get all these things done and be able to put through all the sales and the marketing and the automations that people are looking for as we grow.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's great that there's been a lot that's happened in the like crowdfunding and investment space to make it more possible to do like regulation A offerings and different things like that. So that'll be fun to
yeah,
see.
For us, and we're really open to taking, you know, VC or angel investment. But when I found out about, you know, this kind of crowdfunding investment, it was exciting to me because the same way that I'm hoping not to exploit, you know, with through labor, I want what's invested into our company and the way we grow to also grow our community, like that same concept of like a rising tide going to raise all ships. So I was really excited that not only could we bring in those larger investors who, you know, we've been talking with, but we can also bring in, you know, my uncle who's like been there from day one and so excited about it. And we just don't want to be gatekeeping anyone out of the funding process. So I'm really excited about that potential.
Right. And making sure, yeah, I think that the investment rules have benefited people who have a lot of money and not people who are like wanting to take a risk on a company they believe in. So I think that's a really awesome route to go. Where can people find you? What's the best place and best way for people that are listening to be like, okay, I want to make a switch. How can they do that?
Yeah. So simpleswitch.org is our website. You can find that on desktop or mobile. If you prefer a mobile app experience, we are on Android and iOS as Simple Switch Ethical Shopping. please come hang out with us on Instagram. That's kind of our primary social media platform. So that's simple.switch. Someone still owns the Simple Switch handle, and we haven't been able to get in contact with them. But simple.switch on Instagram. You can find Simple Switch on LinkedIn or me on LinkedIn if you want to follow that journey. And yeah, feel free to reach out with an email with feedback or companies that you love at hello@simpleswitch.org as well.
Awesome. Well, we will have links to all of that in the show notes. And Rachel, this has been wonderful. And I'm definitely personally going to be going and looking at some products to switch over. So I think this has been valuable personally, and I hope for our audience as well. So thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Seth. It's always fun.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.